The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255. 458 Talk. What is on your mind about firearms today? It's a lovely day in Fairbanks, minus 5 degrees. That's actually warm for winter. And here at the KFAR broadcasting station, Melissa Burnett is expertly running the board for us and doing all kinds of extra things for us today. Thank you, Melissa. And she keeps the archives up to date. So if you miss a program, it will be available in the archives within a day. What is on our agenda today?
I'm messing with settings. I'm sorry.
Sorry,
you'll have a little crackle for a minute.
Yeah, a little static. Okay. What is on our agenda today? We have two guests. So my conversation about cleaning guns, anything I told you I was talking about today, I'm not going to be talking about. We'll talk about that next week. Today we have Andrew from the Alaska Machine Gun Association, AGMA, here in the studio. And Andrew submitted a number of nominations for the borough's fiscal year 2025 Capital Improvement Program, known as CIP, and they concern the Cushman Range and also the building of a new long-range shooting range. And then Glenn Miller is also with us by phone all the way from the East Coast, where he has been shooting competitively. Glenn will again join us on December 28th to share reloading information and perhaps other topics. So welcome, Andrew and Glenn.
Hello.
Okay, Andrew's here. Glenn, can you hear us?
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Okay.
On the show, yes.
Okay. So I do appreciate both of you being here today. Last week, Randy called in about the 4570 and the 3030, which we will talk about another time. And there's also a 44 Magnum lever action. But related to that, Randy asked about safety issues with types of ammunition loading into a tubular magazine. And that started a conversation with Glenn and Ron and Jim and Steve, all calling in sharing their knowledge about tubular magazine ammunition issues. So Glenn contacted me and offered to share his knowledge about that, plus about Hornady's flex tip technology bullets and effective temperature ranges, as well as other related information. And Randy mentioned how Chuck Connors operated his Winchester lever action and wondered if Chuck Connors' Rifleman rifle was still in existence. And Mr. Connors, who passed away at the age of 71 in 1992, was an interesting man, and so were his rifles. And I read there were actually three of those rifles used in the series. So Glenn today will add his knowledge about the Rifleman lever rifle. Glenn got interested in the Rifleman at a very early age. And next week, I will talk more in depth about the Rifleman series, Chuck Connors, and lever action rifles and where they are, because today I want to give our guests the time that they need. But first, before the Borough CIPs and Chuck Connors' 1892 Winchester rifles, and there's a third rifle, a Spanish version, a stent rifle, the El Tiger, which he used in his saddle holster, I want to say a few words about today, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day, and I will do that right after I make some announcements. Very quickly today, Chuck Indereden's upcoming Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes are this weekend, December 9th and 10th, and then 2024, January 27th and 28th, February 24th and 25th, and Chuck is offering his Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen class on December 16th and 17th. So sign up for both, December 9th and 10th, the Concealed Carry class, that's coming up, and then it's going to be 20 below this weekend, so what else can you do? Go take a class. December 16th and 17th, the Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen class. They go together, they mesh together really well. So sign up for Chuck's classes on his website. Alaska Ammo also has information about them. And if you want to be on Chuck's mailing list or have any questions about Chuck's classes, call him at 844-966-4079 or go to his website, c4traininggroup.com. Glenn Miller's upcoming NRA Metallic Cartridge Reloading class, ready for registrants on the AIMCOM website, is April 27, 2024. And so sign up on the AIMCOM website or call Glenn 9- 907-347-1396. And if you want to be in a future reloading class and there's not a date to register on the InKind website, just call Glenn. And Glenn's upcoming MASS, Miller's Action Speed Shooting, is Tuesday evening, December 19th. This event is incredibly popular in Fairbanks. Spots fill up quickly, so more information and signups are available at practicescore.com. It's practicescore, practicescore.com, or just call Glenn at 907-347-1396. And last, Winter Indoor Cowboys are shooting at TVSA this Sunday, December 10th. Doors open at 1 p.m., shots downrange 2 p.m. They've got some cool new targets. And if you just want to try it out, bring a couple of boxes of 22. They will loan you the pistols and the rifle. New shooters shoot free. Contact Jay Cougar Giesen at 907-750-0043, or just show up at TVSA Sunday at 1 p.m. For those of you who celebrate, tonight begins the first night of Hanukkah. I wish all of you who celebrate happy and fulfilling days of Hanukkah celebration. Now, today is Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. On the morning of December 7th, 1941, Japan launched a surprise attack on our naval station at Pearl Harbor. National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day honors the 2,403 citizens of the United States who lost their lives in the Japanese attack. And although we have commemorated the anniversary of that terrible day since it took place, it was October 3rd, 1984, when a joint resolution of Congress authorized then-President Ronald Reagan to issue a proclamation calling upon citizens of the United States to, quote, observe this solemn occasion with appropriate ceremonies and activities, and to pledge eternal vigilance and strong resolve to defend this nation and its allies from all future aggression, unquote. And on this day, flags are flown at half staff until sunset to honor all of those who sacrificed. This day, we remember our entry into World War II, a war that not only changed our nation, but changed the course of World War II. And many steps led up to the Japanese attack. One was that on November 26, Japan's fleet stationed itself about 275 miles north of Hawaii. And it was from there that the Japanese launched about 360 of its planes onto Pearl Harbor. In preparing this discussion, I had to stop for a while and think about how dismissing clues, dismissing information, and lack of preparedness can set parts of the world on fire and launch terrible wars. And not only had the Japanese stationed their fleet close enough to Hawaii to warrant concern, but I read that on more than one occasion, our Navy and Army commanders at Pearl Harbor were warned of a possible attack. And they did take precautions. They did take some precautions, but they truly did not believe an attack of the magnitude of what happened would actually happen, and so the preparations were not adequate. And I read it wasn't only our Army and Navy commanders at Pearl Harbor that now in such close proximity to the Japanese fleet who did not think that an attack would happen, but also our president and Congress did not think our troops at Pearl Harbor, or for that matter, our military as a whole, needed to ramp up for a major Japanese attack. Japan was about 4,000 miles from Hawaii and the country, and 2,000 miles from the mainland United States. There had been rising tensions and complicated situations between the United States and Japan up to Pearl Harbor. The United States had been expanding its influence in the Pacific and Asian markets, and so was Japan. And Japan felt we were intruding into its sphere of influence, and that resources that Japan needed to conquer their sphere of influence were at stake. But there were myriad other issues going on to sour the relationship between the Japanese and the United States in the years leading up to Pearl Harbor. And all that aside for this discussion, some historians think it was a failure of our intelligence community to not properly interpret red flags and anticipate the attack and warn our officials. And that is a part of why we were not ready, just a part of why we were not ready for the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. The rationalization was that a Japanese attack was not imminent. Nevertheless, at 7:55 a.m. Hawaii time, December 7th, 1941, the Imperial Japanese Navy Air Service began its first wave of attack on Naval Station Pearl Harbor. And Japan launched a second wave of attack 8:50 a.m., and that lasted until about 9 a.m. Japan wanted to destroy our Pacific fleet and fighters on the airfield after that. Their plan was to move aggressively toward forward in the South Pacific, and they figured that they would have crippled us too much to mount a defense. So today we commemorate the 2,403 United States citizens that died at Pearl Harbor. Of those, 2,335 were service members, 68 were civilians, 1,178 Americans were wounded and injured. On the USS Arizona, 1,177 crewmen lost their lives when the Japanese dropped an 1,800-pound bomb in the first 30 minutes of their attack. Then torpedoes hit and sank the USS Oklahoma, with 400 sailors losing their lives. The USS Utah was sunk. 48 servicemen lost their lives. We're going to go to break, and I will quickly finish this around the corner and then turn the program over to Andrew. So stay with us.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Maintaining your correct tire pressure improves safety, fuel economy, and tire life. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Mainly cloudy skies expected today, with daytime highs approaching 8 above. Northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, chance of snow. Lows level off around 6 below. Snow likely again tomorrow, high of 0. Overcast skies. A dusting of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Melissa Burnett's on the controls. Andrew from the Alaska Machine Gun Association is sitting next to me. And Glenn Miller is on the East Coast, and he's with us, too. I call in when if you have anything to add. It's 458-8255, 458-TALK.
And we do have a caller on the line.
Caller, you are on the line.
Yes, this is Laura Jewell. And the U.S. Navy actually used the tactics the Japanese did on that day in 1938 and I believe in 1932.
Huh, okay.
That air assets were viable. And they actually came in the same attack line that the Japanese used.
Okay. Thank you for that information. That's very helpful. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you, caller. All right. I was going over in commemoration to mention the ships that were destroyed: the USS California, the USS West Virginia, the USS Maryland, the USS Pennsylvania, the USS Tennessee, the USS Nevada were all sunk or damaged, resulting in injuries and death. And there was much more. So many stories from the men who lived to tell them. And luckily, our specific fleet's three aircraft carriers were not docked at Pearl Harbor at the time. And we also had some cruisers and destroyers not docked. So those were saved. And some of our facilities were not destroyed. destroyed. From Wikipedia, quote, as for the Japanese, they lost fewer than 100 men, 60 or fewer planes, 5 midget submarines, and perhaps 1 or 2 fleet submarines in the attack, unquote. And we all know our answer to this attack. The American public was unified to call to enter into World War II. The next day, December 8, 1941, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt made his famous speech to Congress in which he said that December 7, 1941 was a date which will live in infamy and further, quote, no matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make very certain this form of treachery shall never endanger us again, end quote. And then President Roosevelt asked Congress to declare war on Japan. 3 days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States, and we declared war on them too. And I want to quote parts of several paragraphs from Matthew Rozelle's book, The Things Our Fathers Saw, The Untold Stories of the World War II Generation from Hometown USA. This volume has the voices of the Pacific Theater in it. Chapter 1 is titled A Sunday Morning, quote, on Saturday, December 6, 1941, life was good for the average high school student in America. Despite the fact that war was raging in Europe and the Empire of Japan had begun its 10th year of conquest, massacre, slavery, and rape in Manchuria, Korea, and eastern China, while many families still struggled with the challenges brought by the Depression, most didn't know we were poor because everyone seemed to be in the same situation. Holiday preparations were underway. Football and basketball practice occupied many hours that fall. Little did the players realize just how important their ability to function as a team unit would soon become, and for some, it would be a skill essential to their survival, unquote. And the next section is, where the heck is Pearl Harbor? Quote, the world changed on a dime that weekend when the Japanese Empire launched its early Sunday morning aerial attack on Pearl Harbor. In the New York State, it was early afternoon. Church services had concluded. Some families heard the announcement as they were traveling to relatives' homes for Sunday dinner. Many others were at home or in a car listening to the New York Giants football game on the radio. Others were in local theaters to see the latest Abbott and Costello release when the show was interrupted and the announcement of the attack was made. For the young people and their elders, the response was the same, outrage, followed by the universal question, where the heck is Pearl Harbor? The other universal feeling was the uneasy realization that life was going to be significantly altered from here on out, unquote. And so our innocence and peace were yet again in our history destroyed by war. Life changed, families changed, our country changed, and we helped change for the good the future of Europe and the Pacific. None of us know what would have transpired or what warring countries would have looked like had we preemptively struck Japan based on our intelligence and if Pearl Harbor had never happened. And while today we remember our fallen servicemen and citizens, our heroes, let us remember not to discount intelligence and to always feel prepared. No complacency for each of us individually or for our countries and for countries who depend on us for support. And that is my remembrance of Pearl Harbor Day. Okay, on a nicer note, Andrew, tell us about these CIPs that you submitted.
All right, well, first of all, I'm going to give everyone a little bit of NFA news since it's been a while since I've been here. Manufacturers and organizations are continuing to fight ATF determinations on pistol braces. That actually was reversed by a court. Who knows how long it's going to stay that way. And they're also fighting the decision on forced reset triggers. The 90-day approval goal of e-forms is currently running at about 240 days, so it's not doing pretty good. Unlike in the past, ATF is also getting in the bad habit of not returning forms for minor corrections. So after you wait 8 months, you get to start all over again.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
oh, fun.
Yes. And then it gets even better. So one of my electronic submissions that I did mysteriously dropped a responsible party and changed a 2 into a 1, hence the corrections I had to make, even after I had certified it. So something in the electronic system got changed somewhere, and they have been able to figure that
interesting.
Out. But today I'm here to talk about 5 Borough Capital Improvement Program nominations that would either improve or expand the South Cushman Shooting Range or construct a facility at a new location. For years, myself and other shooters have made comments to borough staff and elected officials concerning the lack of adequate shooting range space, locations, and shooting distance. Thanks to the 2022 South Cushman Range upgrades that caught many of us by surprise and ultimately wound up, unfortunately, decreasing the width of the shooting line by nearly a third, I delved into things and learned how the borough CIP process works. So every 2 years, there is a short nomination period. It was only 42 days long in 2023. A concerned citizen, a group, an employee of the borough, or a business has to nominate a project and provide basic information. If you want something done in the borough and it's a big project, talking to someone about it is probably a waste of your time until it is nominated. So if you have a concern, get online, figure this out, and start nominating things. After nomination, the borough assembly votes to include various projects on the CIP list. This is going to occur on December 14th at the assembly chambers. Contacting assembly members or testifying at the meetings will help gain project approval to the list. That's not the end of it. Once the project is on the list, then the assembly will vote to allocate funds to various projects. That meeting is scheduled for February 22nd. Again, contacting or testifying is the way to go. This year, 124 projects were nominated. 82 of those fall under the Parks and Rec Department, 24 are under the school district, and 18 are classified as others. Five nominations are concerning the shooting ranges. Four of them I submitted, and another one was submitted by another member of the AMGA. So the nominations are, first off, there's two that are to fix minor problems from the 2022 upgrades. The first one is to return the popular gravel fill from the firing line to the 50-yard berm for the eight tables it previously serviced prior to the upgrades that unnecessarily removed it. This removal has impacted shooters negatively, especially individuals with disabilities. Many people shoot at distances of less than 50 yards, like if they're shooting pistols in conjunction with shooting rifles, small bore rifle targets, specifically like with kids, 25-yard zero or 36-yard zero on an AR-type rifle, and also if you're practicing defending yourself from a charging bear. Typically, you're shooting your shotguns with the slugs at distances of less than 50 yards. So having these big open holes and having you traverse down into them, sometimes they're full of mud, water. Yeah. It just wasn't a really good thing. And then the second one, they made an engineering mistake. Our old roof structure used to have round steel posts. So if somebody had errant gunfire, it would hopefully go down and away from the shooting line. They installed flat square steel posts, and they didn't rotate them 45 degrees to get that gunfire away from somebody. So hopefully those get taken care of.
That's a ricochet problem.
Yeah, and there's already a bullet strike. It looked like about a 45. Mm. And, you know, it's not going to be the person that goofs up or does something stupid. It's going to be probably, unfortunately, the little kid out there that's
absolutely
10 feet away.
Mm-hmm. Well, there have been bullet marks on the previous ones. And that's really, I think, what it is somebody just shooting at them.
Yes.
And they're going to be very surprised, and it's going to be very dangerous.
Yeah, but as close as some of those are out underneath there, if someone's out there that's doing rapid fire and they're not really good at that, the potential for an accident is there.
It's big.
And, yeah, something very simple to fix that. What I suggested in that CIP was to take some heavy angle iron and just weld it to it. You're talking something that could be done in about a day's time for probably less than $10,000.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot cheaper than a lawsuit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the third one is an expansion of the current South Cushman Range. And that would be adding two roughly 150-foot by 100-yard rifle ranges. One would be full gravel fill, and this would be adjacent to the existing range, so you'd share the one common berm that's out there. That would help decrease your costs. You've already got plenty of parking out there in a road. That helps decrease the cost, too. This would create an additional 20 shooting spots for rifles. And most of the visitors that go out there to shoot rifles, most everybody is shooting at about 100 yards. There are a few people that shoot beyond that, but that's a good distance. The advantage to having one of those ranges with full gravel fill is it gives a place for competitions to happen, IPSC competitions. Gives a place for the law enforcement agencies to do training, which they're lacking in the area now. Okay, number four is construction of a new 100-yard rifle range at a new location somewhere between North Pole and Eielson. It would be similar to the third one that I mentioned about 250-foot by 100-yard rifle range, with the one being gravel-filled. And then the fifth one would be construction of a new 600 to 1,000-yard rifle range somewhere between North Pole and Eielson. The South Cushman range used to be 600 yards long. For the people that have been here for many years, we remember this. But the Tanana River decided to eat it about 30 years ago. And over the years, there was some work to build a replacement. There were some promises made, but that all stalled. So we've been without more than 300 yards for quite a long time.
About 15 seconds before our half-hour break.
Okay. So long-distance shooting has become more popular over the years. A significant percentage of big-game animals taken during hunting season are taken at distances beyond the capabilities of the South Cushman Range.
Okay, we are going to go to our half-hour break, and stay with us because I've got a couple questions for Andrew, and then Glenn will pick up his part of the program.
Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep.
In a bass voice rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings.
Broadcasting from the Satellite West studio, providing cost-effective satellite-based voice text and data transfer from any.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Donald Trump returned to his New York civil fraud trial today. The former president is accused of inflating the value of his businesses and misleading banks. Trump claims the case against him is politically motivated.
This is what we're doing here while people are being murdered right outside on the sidewalks and streets of New York.
His defense presented a witness today who claimed there was no evidence of accounting fraud. The House has voted to censure Congressman Jamal Bowman after he pulled a Capitol complex fire alarm during a September vote that his fellow Democrats were attempting to delay.
Bowman said he went before the Capitol Police in a court of law. The top Democrat on the House Rules Committee, Jim McGovern, called the censure, quote, stupid. But Republicans argue that Bowman made a big mistake and should face punishment.
Fox's Chad Pergram. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Alaska court system has posted a warning about a scam that's been around a while but seems to have resurfaced recently. Alaska News Source reports in it, someone who claims to be an officer of the law or member of the court system calls and says they have a warrant for one's arrest for failure to show up for jury duty. The only way to avoid arrest is to pay. Anchorage District Court Judge Leslie Dixon said there are several red flags people should be aware of. For one, she said it's extremely unlikely that anyone from the court system would call a potential juror directly. Communication about jury duty is almost always by email or letter. Second, she says no one gets arrested or is asked to pay when they don't show up. She said this is just not something we would ever do, so that's the biggest clue that it's a scam. Still, scammers are good at what they do, and they appear to be contacting people who may never have been called for jury duty in the first place. In some cases, they offer to clear up the, quote, misunderstanding about what's happened if the victim will share personal information, including financial information.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Hey, Fairbanks, Ben here with Auto Trim Design. For 39 incredible years, you've made us your go-to destination for all of your vehicle customization needs. And as the holiday season approaches, we want to take a moment to say thank you. Your loyalty and support have been our driving force. We couldn't have reached this milestone without your trust and patronage. And remember, at Auto Trim Design, we will be here when the other guys are gone. From all of us at Auto Trim Design, thank you, Fairbanks.
Happy Holidays!
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting, predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
And now,
Back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Melissa Burnett is on the controls, and Andrew is next to me from the Alaska Machine Gun Association, and Glenn Miller is on the East Coast waiting until it's his turn to talk about the rifles. And Andrew's going to finish up some information because I talked too long the first 15 minutes, so now we're all pushback. So, Andrew, continue, please.
So, some of the other projects that were nominated during the current CIP include an outdoor salt water pool with screens to keep bugs out and fake grass. So, that's only going to be open during the summer months, and we know that won't be cheap. But my favorite was...
Are you serious?
Yes, and I did not read through all of them. My favorite was plasma gasification of wastes for revenue share. It has a high price tag. The technology is questionable. You got to wonder what this might do to our air quality issue that we keep fighting in the town. And the nominator says it would add to the PFD, but you got to wonder how a borough function is going to add to a state function.
Right. Yeah. Good question.
Yeah. And so our other area outdoor range at 36-mile Chena Hot Springs Road that's under the purview of the state, it is slated for upgrades, and they actually had comments that were due back in October. A 30-day period was given. I found out about that last week. I'm wondering, did anybody else hear about this?
30-day period, and nobody heard about it.
Yeah, pretty cool. I did get to speak with the engineer in charge.
It's like the GARS intersection.
Yeah.
and at least the person I spoke with was very very interested in what I had to say, and specifically I was talking about the posts, and let's not get that wrong, and they had mentioned they had actually looked at doing wood posts.
Yeah.
Because but then they said, well, people will probably shoot it. I said, well, if you do steel, make them round or turn it 45 degrees and you'll be good.
Yeah.
She was very appreciative for that. But anyways, the range out there, it's going to be enlarged slightly width-wise. Distance is going to be reduced to about 100 yards. It's mm-hmm. currently only about 130 yards, so not much difference there. Berms side and at the end, parking area upgraded, and a roof installed. So that'll be good.
Okay.
But they said that'll probably be 2 or 3 years out. So projects like these shooting ranges, how are they funded? Typically, Pittman-Robertson funds provide a reimbursement now up to 90% on qualifying projects. And those funds are derived from taxes on ammunition and firearms. The residents of this borough buy a lot of firearms and ammunition, and we have one of the highest firearm ownership rates in the country. Some years we are actually the highest. We should be lobbying to get our share of this tax money used back on our local projects. So the matching 10% that you would typically think would come from the borough or the state doesn't have to come right from your tax-based dollars. Some of it can be done from local donations, such as land donations, volunteer labor, donated materials, and donated equipment time. So projects like this really, in essence, are a good bang for the buck.
Yeah, definitely.
So per borough's data, roughly 9% of parks and rec facility users are the users of the South Cushman Range. Is it getting 9% of the parks and rec budget? I don't think so.
No.
So to the best of my knowledge, the South Cushman Range was built in the early 80s. If anyone knows the exact date, please call in, let me know. The population of the borough has increased about 45% since the early 80s. During that growth, some of the people that used to shoot in undeveloped areas saw the areas developed and became unsafe or impossible to continue in these locations, so they lost it and they had to start using the range more often mm-hmm. or somewhere
yes.
else. And over the years, firearm ownership has increased. Nationwide, there was a 40% increase from 2010 alone. It could reasonably be argued that the borough needs 2 to 3 times the current number of shooting spaces we have. Without meeting the needs of the community, more conflicts with property owners, like out in the Rozak Road area, and other recreationists will continue to increase. Parks and Rec has 55 parks, 45 soccer fields, 30 ball fields, 4 boat launches, 3 pools, and only 1 shooting range.
One shooting range.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty sad.
Andrew, how can we help you, those listeners who want to help or pitch in? Is there a public testimony?
Public testimony. You can also get on the borough's website, follow a few links, and you can just craft a simple email saying that you want to see more done with the shooting ranges, we need more space, however you want to put it. You can also get in and read through the 5 proposals. You'll have to search for them. They're not all together, but they're all on the borough's website. Yeah. Or you can come down to the meeting. I'm sure there will be a lot of people there to testify, since that's the meeting.
Yeah, and the date of the meeting again?
December 14th.
December 14th.
6 p.m.
And listeners, what I did was I went to the borough website. There's a little, about halfway down the page, you can just key in what you want. Just key in CIPs, and the next page will come up, and you'll be able to see them all. They're in categories. And I pulled all of Andrew's off of that, so it's not too hard to find if you want to read them.
Yep.
It's pretty quick.
It's pretty available. Okay. They keep the kit right there, pretty prevalent for people to find.
Okay, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You should be on more often. You incredible amount of information.
Well, now that I'm in town more, I can.
Good.
We just got to figure it out and work the schedule in.
He tends to show up when I'm doing remotes and not here for you.
Well,
that's because there's food there.
There's food.
Okay. Glenn, are you still with us?
I am still here and awake.
Okay. Come on. No, Andrew had a sad look.
We heard you snoring, and I had to turn you down.
No, Andrew's too interesting to fall asleep. Okay, well, would you like to tell us what you have today about the ammunition and the rifleman guns, and take as long as you want? We've got till the end of the hour. We kind of encroached on your time.
not a problem. And Andrew, my comment was not meant to mean that your topic is boring. it's very important, and I'm glad you're doing this. It's just every time we talk about borough politics, I start to nod off.
Understandable.
And But anyway, thank you for your efforts on that. And Laura, thank you for the mention of Pearl Harbor. And I just encourage anyone that hasn't visited the USS Arizona Memorial to do so. I've been there. It's a very worthwhile visit, very moving experience, and it's a great way to honor those that gave their lives on that day. So anyway, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
It's nice and warm, so, nice place to go.
Yes. Win-win.
Okay, so let's go on to, we'll talk about some bullet types, because in the last program, there was some questions about the bullet types to use in firearms with tubular magazines. And to understand why that's important to use the correct bullets, it's equally important to understand what happens in a tubular magazine where live cartridges are stored. And because ammunition in firearms, such as lever action rifles, they're only stored in a tubular magazine, and they're stacked end to end under spring pressure. It's important to consider the type of bullet you select for safety reasons. And the tip of each bullet rests against the primer on the cartridge in front of it. So if you were to use a bullet style that's hard or pointed profile, you've just increased the likelihood of having one or more of those cartridges in the magazine detonate due to the inertial forces from the normal firing process. And even dropping the gun on the muzzle hard enough could result in the same thing. So remember, when you pull the trigger and discharge a rifle, what happens? The recoil sends the rifle rearwards, right?
Right.
And there's a spring in the front of the magazine tube that's also forcing the live cartridges rearward towards the receiver. So when the rifle recoils, all the cartridges in the magazine are compressed against the spring because the rifle's rapidly moving rearward while the cartridges are not firmly affixed to the firearm. And then when the shooter is recovering from recoil, and all this happens very quickly, and the rifle is moving forward, the magazine spring is now forcing all those cartridges rearward until they quickly slam to a stop against the magazine cartridge stop. So all of this energy of the moving cartridges is focused on the contact points of each cartridge in the magazine, which is the tip of each bullet against the primers in all the forward cartridges. So that's why you don't want to use a hard-pointed bullet, or you just kind of may have an explosion in the magazine tube, which is really undesirable, especially if your support hand is wrapped around the forearm of that rifle, right?
Right.
So to avoid this, you want to use bullets that are designed for this type of firearm, which are typically flat-nose bullets or a very blunt and soft round-nose bullet. The exception are those pointed bullets designed specifically for lever-action guns, but the tip is made from a very soft material that won't detonate a primer, and the flex tip bullet by Hornady is a good example of this style of bullet used in their factory ammo that's called Lever Revolution, or the flex tip bullets are available to reloaders as components. So last week, a caller voiced concerned about the pointed flex tip bullets being used in this application during cold temperatures, where that soft tip material becomes hard and potentially dangerous to use in tubular magazines. And I've had numerous conversations with Hornady engineers about this, and I'm going to share that information.
So 15 seconds to break, Glenn.
Okay, so when we come back from break, I'll share my information that I have from Hornady engineers specifically about their testing and their experiments that they've conducted with the flex tip bullets.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go to break, folks. Stay with us, and Glenn will finish up around the corner.
For the ultimate holiday experience at Auto Trim Design. With our top-of-the-line accessories, the season will be unforgettable. Treat yourself or gift that special person to the ultimate driving experience. With Auto Trim Design's remote starts, running boards, heated seats, moose lights, and spray-in bed liners, your adventures will be filled with comfort, convenience, and festive joy. Make this holiday season truly unforgettable with Auto Trim Design. Come find us under the big American flag, 2550 South Cushman.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
KFAR weather.
Mainly cloudy skies today with highs around 8 above. Northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight. Chance for snow. Lows around 6 below. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Snow likely. High temperatures reach up to 0. A dusting of snow tonight through tomorrow. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, Melissa Burnett on the controls, KFAR Radio. And Andrew from the Alaska Machine Gun Association is with us in the studio. And Glenn Miller is on the East Coast. And he is just in the midst of telling us about, I think we're talking about the Hornady Flex Tip and your conversation with Hornady. So, Glenn, it's all yours.
All right. Thank you, Laura. So I wanted to share my information that that I have from Hornady, specifically about the flex tip bullet used during cold temperatures, where possibly that soft tip material could become hard and potentially dangerous in tubular magazines and maybe, you know, ignite cartridges in front of it. So I've had multiple conversations with Hornady about this, both verbally and in writing, and their technicians shared with me some of their experience that they conducted with the flex tip bullets, both in extreme hot and extreme cold temperatures. So these bullets have been tested quite extensively before they put them out on the market. The cold temperature testing that Hornady conducted went down to 25 below Fahrenheit. And at these temperatures, it did result in some hardening of the flex tip material, but it was not enough to create any concern for primer detonation on the forward cartridges.
Hey, Glenn, we have a phone call for you. Oh, looks like they hung up.
Okay,
never
call,
mind.
Yeah, call back. Okay, Glenn, continue, please.
Okay. So we know that we'll certainly encounter colder temperatures in Alaska than, you know, 25 below, but the likelihood of hunting in temperatures, of those temperatures, yeah, that's pretty remote. I know you won't find me hunting in those temperatures.
No.
That's for sure. But anyway, so, you know, ease the concern about the flex tip bullets and the colder temperatures because they have been tested. And while we're on the topic of bullet selection for lever action guns or tubular magazines, besides the tip profile, make sure you select a bullet with a crimp ring or crimp cantilever. You see, I'm working into the reloading portion of it.
Okay.
Now. No, not factory ammo. But it's important to use bullets with the crimp cantilever so that the proper crimp can be applied when you're shooting the bullet. And for the same reasons I mentioned earlier during the firearm discharge process, the movement of those cartridges in the magazine tube back and forth can push bullets further into the cartridge case if a proper crimp isn't applied. And so if that happens, it can result in a really dangerous situation as chamber pressures can rise very rapidly as the bullet is seated farther into the case. So be sure to use bullets with a crimp cantilever if you're reloading, and use a taper crimp after bullet seating. And back to the flex tip bullets, I have a couple of tips, no pun intended here, but for magazines, so if you're using those flex tip bullets and you have them in the magazine tube of your rifle, Hornady also suggests that you don't store them that way for long-term storage because the tips could flatten slightly while under tension from the magazine spring. So it's a good idea to unload the rifle after you've been using it hunting and don't store them in that magazine. And if also if you're concerned about cold temperatures and your reloader, CCI offers NATO spec military primers. And they're actually harder. The cups are harder and resistant to slam fires. And for the large rifle, they're CCI number 34, and they are harder. And if you're the least bit concerned about the cold temperatures and your reloader, you can use those primers for a little added safety. But, you know, I personally don't see a huge advantage of using any type of pointed projectiles and lever action guns because most lever guns, they're designed to use for relatively short range shooting. You know, we're talking 200 yards or less. And in most cases, it's within 100 yards. And the ballistic coefficient advantage of bullets, pointed bullets over flat nose bullets is pretty negligible within 100 yards. So, but if you do plan on taking longer shots, the pointed bullets will have less drop and they retain more downrange energy due to less velocity loss over those blunt bullets. So there you have it. That's my information on the flex tip bullet.
That is wonderful information. Thank you.
So while we're talking about lever guns,
yes.
last week a caller asked a few questions about a lever action gun in the TV program called The Rifleman. And when that question came up, it really piqued my interest because The Rifleman TV program was a regular part of my viewing diet as a young child, and in fact, I hold it responsible for my interest in firearms.
Oh, wow, well, I didn't know that. That's great.
4 years old, yeah. It just fascinated me. So, you know, every day when I watch Chuck Connors shoot that lever-action rifle at lightning speed with each program, I had to know more about him. So I spent time researching Chuck Connors and the rifle, and, you know, came to admire that every day after school on a black and white TV set with rabbit ears, right?
Oh, wow. That's great.
So there were several lever rifles that were used on the set, and two of them were Winchester Model 92 loop lever carbines. And the quick-shooting character, which was Lucas McCain, It didn't involve any trick photography. Chuck Connors was a highly proficient with these rifles, and it didn't hurt that he was a professional athlete, both basketball, baseball, prior to his acting career, and he performed all his own shooting stunts. And he played for the Boston Celtics. He even holds the record for being the first professional basketballer to shatter a backboard.
Yeah, he's a very interesting person, very accomplished.
Yeah, he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers, the Chicago Cubs, the first baseman, and he was even drafted by the Chicago Bears, even though he didn't play. But you want to talk about an all-around athlete.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the rifles. You know, he had several modifications to them, and the most recognized was that set screw that was located through the trigger guard on the lever, which contacted the tip of the trigger when the lever was slammed closed.
Ah.
And Chuck Connors added a locking nut to this modification to further the reliability after the adjustment, and the set screw could be backed out, and the rifle would perform like any normal lever-action rifle. And those familiar with the program, that have watched the program, probably noticed that Chuck Connors always wore these hefty leather gloves when he was doing a shooting scene with the rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped protect his hands while working the lever of the rifle so quickly, performing the spin-cocking routines, if anybody has seen that, especially with that set screw that protruded from the trigger guard. But the program, they made no efforts to hide or conceal the set screw that contacted the trigger. It can be seen in various shots, including the opening scene where Chuck Connors cranks out a seemingly endless volley of shots with that carbine. And in one episode, the character Lucas McCain, he's riding in a stagecoach with his son and an elderly woman where she asks about the rifle. And Lucas McCain is then seen showing her the rifle, including the set screw through the lever, in which he explains how this allows him to shoot the rifle rapidly. So the program was very overt about this modification.
How interesting.
And the other modification to the rifle was a spring-loaded plunger near the chamber that allowed the gun to be spun-cocked by the actor. And this held that blank cartridge in place during the spin-cocking the rifle. And without this modification, the cartridge would just fly out of the open breech during this wild cocking procedure. But beyond this modification, to be able to perfect this maneuver with a lever-action carbine, some coordination and practice, and most people can't do this without the end of the rifle smack him in the chest or the shoulder area during that spin. But Chuck Connors was 6'5".
Yes.
His height added to that ability to perfect this stunt. And another famous actor that perfected it was John Wayne. He was 6'4". And that aided in his ability to cock the lever-action rifle the same way while perched upon a moving stagecoach in the movie Stagecoach. And in fact, It was the same rifle used by Chuck Connors in the Rifleman TV program. So this rifle has a lot of history behind it.
This is wonderful information, and this is why parents should let their kids watch TV. See, that's my
Absolutely.
Problem. My parents would not let my brother and I watch TV. We had to go out and play. We had to read a book. We could only watch TV for like 2 hours on Saturday morning, and that was
No, it. You got to let them watch Stagecoach.
Yeah. Oh, Glenn, you had a wonderful childhood.
If you want to see this rifle, Laura, or, you know, they're at the it's at the Gene Autry Museum in California, but, you know, keep in mind, this rifle used only blank cartridges during filming, so... You know, if you want to try to do this now, may not be a good idea, you know, making these types of modifications.
Yeah, no.
you know, especially with live ammo, may not be a good idea. Let's leave the memories and stunts to the
Glenn says, actors. Kids, do not try this at home.
did you ever try this when you were a kid with a stick or a small rifle or your BB gun or...
No, I don't believe I have. Maybe if I have, it wasn't successful because it didn't go anywhere.
My dad had a slam fire 16 gauge that me and a buddy used to get into trouble with.
Oh, okay. Well, this is just wonderful information. I really appreciate it. How are the matches going on the East Coast?
They're going great. Well, they could always go better, right? Anytime you shoot, you can always shoot better. But I'll be shooting this weekend, and then I travel down to Florida. I'll be shooting a match down there before getting on a plane and heading home, back home for about a month and a half.
Well, this is just great. I hope everyone enjoyed this. I learned a lot.
We have about 30 seconds.
We have about 30 seconds. I am going, thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Andrew. I appreciate both of you. I'm going to read the safety rules because I was going to talk about Joe's book, but I'll do that next week, and now I've got Joe on my mind. So let me just do that to close out. Always keep, here, we'll read them together.
All right.
Okay, ready? Okay. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. And always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. Safety is very, very important. And again, part of this program is making Fairbanks the safest place to be a gun person in America. All right, folks, I will talk to you all next week. I hope you can join us, and I hope we don't have any super cold weather. Oh, because we could
talk to Glenn, you there?
Are you here, Glenn?
Nope, he hung up.